I greet you all in Jesus' name this morning, and I welcome you to this workshop, What to Look For When Visiting. As Brother Carson was sharing, I had challenged myself on the thought of what it would feel like to set my 10-year-old, perhaps, child here at the front and have him or her tell you as an audience how they feel about their parents visiting school. Would that perhaps offer a window, an indication into my life? And I challenge you into years of what your vision is for the school. I think there is a connection here. When I was approached by the committee on whether I would have this topic, and I consented, obviously, I was told that the vision around this title is a practical discussion, and also a suggestion was made that I would not overthink the content. So I took that as a hint that I am not to do all of the talking here, but rather that I was being asked to lead out in a discussion where everyone feels welcome to share from their experience. So while I am happy to share some things that I have learned while preparing for this topic, I'm also happy that I sensed that the committee felt it would be best to give you as an audience adequate opportunity to share your perspectives as well. So please feel free to speak up when you do have something to share. I do welcome your input. And maybe I will say that I do intend to give more time for that, perhaps in the last half of this, but not only that. So what to look for when visiting school? I think what I look for and what you look for, what different people look for, will no doubt vary. Each person will view through a unique set of eyes. I'm going to just swiftly cover various things that various persons might or may or should look for when they are visiting. And these are just a few people that I thought of, and you might think of more. But the first one that I had was patrons. As a parent with a child or children in school, obviously I will have an interest in seeing firsthand that my child is getting the education that we are paying for, and also that my child is in an environment where he or she can flourish and grow, whether that is emotionally, physically, spiritually, or intellectually. And later, we're going to get into what observations will influence my opinion, whether or how these needs are being met. The second one is teachers. In our school and others I know of, school boards encourage, if they don't outright make it a requirement, that their teachers go and visit other schools sometime during the school term. We look at this as a training resource for our teachers, seeing other teachers in action. And we also look at it as a collaboration tool, making connections with others, perhaps more experienced teachers, and they might be turning to these after this visit, looking for advice. Connections are made. Our teachers might be looking for new or better teaching techniques, bulletin board ideas, playground supervision styles, basically anything that will help them to become a better teacher. The third group of people that I thought of were siblings, and this is maybe a unique one, but I think it is good for a 20-year-old and his 8-year-old sibling to have the experience of seeing each other in the classroom when the 20-year-old stops in for a visit. Maybe the 20-year-old is there only to see the expression on his brother or sister's face when they make that eye contact there, whether it's an expression of shock or shyness, whatever, pleased. Regardless of what he is looking for or what he saw, we know that it has meant a lot for that young student to see the interest shown in their life by their older brother or sister. And then the fourth group of people is administrators, and that's our primary audience here today. Ministry, school board members, whether you're serving as a chairman or secretary, treasurer, principal, or other roles that you might have. Again, because of the added responsibility that those in these roles carry, we're going to probably have a slightly different set of things that we will put effort into trying to observe when we enter the classroom. So where the patron or any other visitor's purpose to visit may be more or less to show interest in the school and a willingness to show support and encouragement by their presence, the administrator will often have an additional purpose, and that is of evaluation. And I do hope to get into the nuts and bolts of evaluation visits and discover ways together that help to make these visits a satisfactory, comfortable, and beneficial experience for everyone involved. So those are some of the different groups of visitors that we could talk about. And we see that the purposes of visiting will vary depending on the situation. But today, like I said earlier, we will be focusing more on the administration side and that of evaluation. So I'll just ask a question to you. Is visiting school important? What are your thoughts? Is visiting school important? Absolutely. Why do we think that way? Just a few quick answers here, maybe. Very good. It shows our interest to the children. Any others?
It shows our support for the teachers. Stick them in the classroom.
That's right. It shows our support to the teachers. It also offers an extra set of eyes that may see things that otherwise would be missed. I thought I'd just relate a little story here. It's not directly connected to school, but maybe it'll help to relax us and warm us up to this topic. And as I relate this story, I want you to think how this story might parallel your visit to school. For my occupation, we operate an abattoir, a butcher shop, and about two or three years ago, we did, I'll call it a major expansion. It's still not a huge building, but we did add some square footage. And part of that expansion included installing a new smokehouse. And that smokehouse has a propane burner for its energy source. And we also have some other boilers that run on propane. And anyhow, a large propane tank was installed, and somehow there was never a real inspection done, and the propane tank was filled, and we started using it. No visitor ever came to do an inspection. Time went by, I'll say maybe about a year into it. Things were going well, and you might have called me on my cell phone and asked me, how is your propane system working? I would have responded in the positive. Everything is working like it should. We are doing fine, and we expect to keep churning out quality end product for many years to come, and maybe this could be the school graduates. The banker or the investing patrons, they're happy, they're getting what they expect. There is nothing to worry about. You may have hung up after the call, maybe, maybe not, feeling satisfied that things are actually going well, everything is okay. It seems there is nothing that is about to blow up, and that's good. And maybe you hung up feeling just a bit proud, or at least smug, that you took the courage to call up this brother to ask how his propane system is performing. That does take courage, doesn't it? Now, if you would have had come out to visit and you had a little look around, just maybe you would have spotted some problems. Maybe you would even have smelled the fumes that were leaking out of this sawed-off vent in the back corner of the utility room. Sometimes a visitor can smell when things are just a bit off. Things that those that work with it every day have become accustomed to as being normal. So, a long story short, one afternoon our smokehouse alarm went off with a burner fault, and it ended up the sensor on the tank was faulty and we had run out of propane. We needed to shut down operations. So a technician was dispatched. We had a visitor show up and he soon had the problem figured out. And after some small talk, he asked whether he could just take a bit of a look around. He notices something on the gas line entering into the building, and he'd like to just do a bit more inspecting. He had found a problem. So after a few quick checks inside the building, this sawed-off vent was discovered, plus some other deficiencies, and a full-fledged inspection was ordered. Our visitor realized that there was a lot at stake, including his business with us, but he considered that business as being less important than our own physical welfare. After pussyfooting around just a little bit, and trying to figure out how I will respond to this all, he informed me that this will take about $10,000 in upgrades and we can maybe carry on. And he looked at me and I looked at him and I said, okay, we'll get this all fixed up. And anyhow, here we had an unflinching man. He had broad shoulders. He had the ability to look one straight in the eye, tell it straight how it is, what it's going to take to fix it. And as a result of that interaction, we are now good friends. You know, they got some of my money. We keep doing business with them. And I have a respect for him. And I trust it is the other way around as well. So I'll note this inspection was not planned, but rather it came by chance. A visitor on a routine service call being alert to the surroundings beyond the immediate needs and doing something about it. So that is the type of people that we need visiting our schools today. People that are willing to put maybe their reputation on the line by doing the right thing. Not people that are always out looking for trouble. Those people usually find it. But persons that can sense when help is needed and can properly channel the help that is needed in a way that does not tear down, but rather that which builds up and protects the structure of learning and discipline that we desire in our schools. So what are some things that we are actually looking for? I don't have a handout of this, but I'm going to just go over a few things on a form that we, some years ago, used as an evaluation form when board members visited the classroom. And it's probably not a complete list, but just to get your minds going on what we're actually talking about. So on the teacher evaluation side, I have six things here. Does the teacher connect with students? Does he or she look at them, call on them, etc.? Number two, is the teacher keeping the students' attention? Does the teacher have good command? Does she seem to be in charge? Does the teaching have proper balance of meat and spice or business and variety? How well does the teacher know the lesson? How does the teacher relate to students as persons? And looking at the students, is there good posture? Do they answer with sufficient volume? Are there no shrugs or headshakes or refusals to answer? Do they have prompt responses if they're asked to clear their desks? Do they do it, or exchanging papers or getting materials? Do they have quiet desks? Are the lids banging? Do they shuffle around a lot? Is there quiet and restful study? When they go up to the teacher's desk, is there order there? Do they talk without permission? They shouldn't. Is there any whining or huffing? Do they raise their hands and they want the teacher's attention and they want it now? Make some noise along with the raised hand. Is there any boisterous laughter? Is there orderly exchange for checking? Minimal answer repeating while checking? Is there a general orderly classroom movement? Are lessons completed? Is there respect for the teacher? And is there neatness in dress and appearance? So you could add a lot more things to that list, I'm sure, but those are some things that we might be or should be looking for when we visit school. So if you have your Bibles with you, I'd like for you to turn to Exodus chapter 18. I don't have any handouts here this morning, but I would like to use this chapter as a handout, as a guide or an outline for our discussion. I don't think I'm going to take the time to read the account. It might have been good to get the sense of the whole account, but for the sake of time, I think we'll leave that. We have the account here of Jethro, verse 1, the priest of Midian, Moses' father-in-law. He had heard what God had all done for Moses. And down in verse 6, it says, "And he said unto Moses, I, thy father-in-law, Jethro, am come unto thee. I have come to visit you. I'm come unto thee and thy wife and her two sons with her." So we know the background to this story. So I'm going to just get right into this and try to keep it in parallel with our workshop title here, that of visiting school. Looking at verse 7, it says, "And Moses went out to meet his father-in-law and did obeisance and kissed him, and they asked each other of their welfare, and they came into the tent." What I would like to draw out of this verse is the thought of "they asked each other of their welfare." When we visit school, we need to be ready to ask questions. Teacher personalities will vary in how freely they speak everything that is on their hearts or minds. And it can be a challenge to draw out how they really feel about their teaching job. Some may give a breathless 5-minute detailed response as a report as a response to a general question. Another one may be struggling to maintain proper order, and when asked general questions, for example, "How has your week been going so far?" they might briefly look down at the floor and say, "It's been going pretty good." Do you ever get that? Well, with further probing, asking questions, you might discover, or it might be revealed, that "pretty good" means that it's actually been a fairly rough week so far. But you might remember from a previous board meeting that Bobby has been struggling in math, and he doesn't like to do his work, and he has been taking out his frustrations with the lesson on his classmates by being a distraction to them. So asking, has Bobby been showing any improvement in his performance, might get a very different answer from that same teacher than a general question might have. So we need to put thought into what questions we will ask. That is important. The next verse here, it sort of continues this thought. "And Moses told his father-in-law all that the Lord had done unto Pharaoh and to the Egyptians for Israel's sake, and all the travail that had come upon them by the way, and how the Lord delivered them." We see here an environment of openness. Moses told all. We need to encourage open or two-way communication. The joys, the sorrows, and the solutions that God has provided. I'll just open it up to your input if you have any thoughts on ways that we can encourage open communication. If there's nothing, I'll move right on to verse 9, and I think this brings some answers. It says, Jethro rejoiced for all the goodness which the Lord had done to Israel. And what I see here is the effect of looking for the positives, expressing appreciation for the good you see. You know, we can't just always be pointing out the negatives, criticizing everything. That will not encourage good communication, but look for the positives, as Jethro did here. If every visit to your school ends up being primarily an exercise of venting negative feelings or thoughts being discussed, our teachers will quickly come to view our visit as a negative experience in itself. Not always, but many times we could avoid spending as much time as we do working through problems by being proactive in preventing them. Moving down to verse 12 here, I'm thinking about sacrifices that we need to make for the school. It says in verse 12 that Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took a burnt offering. Most things that are worth having have a cost attached to them. If I'd ask for a raise of hands on how many of you walked here this morning, maybe I'll do that. Raise your hand if you walked to this place this morning. I didn't really expect to see a whole lot of hands. And the reason for that is because I understand that at some point you decided that the cost of purchasing a vehicle to get where you need to go, that cost outweighs the benefits. Sorry, I said that wrong. The cost, the benefit of owning a vehicle outweighs the cost of purchasing. So we need to be willing to make sacrifices. And school is that way. There are costs that are involved. In this account, it seems that it was the visitor that brought the sacrifice, and his offering ended up setting a stage for others to come and be blessed. Jethro sacrificed, as it says here, for God, and that is how we need to sacrifice as well, doing it for God, and others will receive a blessing as well. Maybe you can think of some sacrifices that you have needed to make for the work of the school. Any thoughts on that? Thank you for bringing that out. Any other thoughts? Yes. Yes, I agree with that, and I might get some more into that just a little later on here, but thank you for that. That's right. it does take time. And when we do that visit after devotions, it speaks, and it does not go unnoticed. Not that we do it for the sake of being noticed, but there is a support that is shown in that. Yeah, question, do we make sacrifices or investments? I'm not sure if I'm ready to pick that apart, but open it up to you for input.
Every sacrifice is an investment.
Okay, I think that is a good answer. Every sacrifice is an investment. Okay, I would like to move on here. Which verse had we looked at? 12, ready for 13. We have Moses sitting to judge the people, and his father-in-law seeing that, and the fact was that Moses was burning out. He had a heavy load to carry, going strong from morning to evening. And doesn't that sound like the work our teachers face? Thought it might be good to have some discussion on how we can help our teachers avoiding burnout, but I'm going to skip over that and keep moving down here. Verse 14, Moses' father-in-law saw. What I see there is we need to be observant, and that means we need to be there. We can't see what is happening at school if we aren't there. We need to be discerning. If we do see a problem, we need to ask the question, what is the best channel to bring a solution to this problem? Do we speak up immediately? Should we call the board chairman, the parent, a pastor? Every situation will be different. But maybe I could ask the question, what are some guidelines that have helped you in making the right decision to channel a problem to the right person? Someone have a quick answer for that? Mm-hmm. So thank you for that. And maybe we see that in verse 15 and 16 here. Jethro, he had asked the question, okay, what is actually going on here? And Moses had an explanation. And as Jethro was, I believe, we need to be approachable. We need to listen with open ears and minds when an explanation is given. Jethro probably understood quite well what was going on here, and he had already formed an opinion of, first of all, what the problem is and also a solution to the problem. And I think when we see something that begs for change, it is important to always give the proper space for a good explanation of why things are as they appear, because things are not always as they appear. Verse 17, Moses' father-in-law said unto him, the thing that thou doest is not good. What I get out of here is we need to be forthright and honest. After Moses finished his explanation, Jethro did not waste any more time trying to push off what he felt needed to be said. He could have said, I see a bit of a problem here, and I would like to take it to my brethren at the next family gathering, and we'll get back to you with a good plan on how to deal with this problem. Does that sound familiar to you at all? Sometimes the problem is not clear to us, and conferring with others is good and right, but what we are challenged with here is to provide spontaneous, clear direction in situations where putting it off is only to provide provide relief for our own immediate emotions. We need to be definitive. See that in verse 18. Thou wilt surely wear away. Tactfully explain what you see. Don't beat around the bush. That can be very frustrating for the teachers to know that, or they sense that there is a problem that is, it's unspoken, and yet no one has come straight out to them to talk about it. We need to be ready to spontaneously and yet tactfully explain what we see. Teachers do not need to know everything that happens behind administrators' closed doors, but they do want to know what is going on. Jumping down to verse 21, the solution. I'll read the verse. Moreover, thou shalt provide out of all the people able men, such as fear God, men of truth, hating covetousness, and so on. I'll cease reading there. But it takes men of integrity that will work to present a workable solution. Have you ever listened to a person pull apart a situation and degrading those involved, and finally wind down, never a word that would indicate that any thought has been put into offering a solution? We need to be careful that we don't hone our skills in identifying problems without asking God for wisdom in finding solutions to the problems and then being ready to share to the betterment of our schools. I'm not suggesting that young, faithful men with very little experience will have the same perspectives as the more experienced, but at times it does take effort to share what is on our hearts, but do it anyway. Verse 21 and 22, we see a guide here for delegation. We already touched on verse 21, but first of all, we need to be, as administrators, be willing to delegate, and then we need to be ready to seek out those able, God-fearing men and trust them with delegated authority. Enlist the help of others. We are not in this alone. Make sure that the teacher knows that she is not in this alone. Working together takes effort, but working it alone takes a lot more effort. So verse 24, we see that Moses hearkened to the voice of his father-in-law. He did as he was told. Sometimes we have direction for our teachers and make sure that we have follow-up. We need to hang around, so to speak, long enough to know that it is working. In verse 27, then Moses did eventually let his father-in-law go, but Jethro was there to oversee the new way of doing business, and he probably provided some additional tips as things were being ironed out. Maybe just a little bit yet on relationships, and a brother at the back there had mentioned this, that our relationship with the teacher prior to a problem is very important, and I agree very strongly with that. I believe that casual relationships must be cultivated and maintained. Have you ever been at a board meeting where a problem came up and somebody asked the question, why haven't we heard about this before? Obviously, this has been going on for a while, and yet for some reason or other, the teachers have kept it from us, and they have decided to try to tackle the problem on their own, and they were maybe not successful. As administrators, we need to establish a proper relationship with the teaching staff early on. If we are not available to discuss even the weather with our teachers, along with the normal happenings of a school day in a relaxed way, with of course proper reserve between the genders, then we cannot expect that they will be quick to reach out for help when larger problems are starting to show their ugly head. Casual or informal classroom visits can help to this end, simply as a means of becoming better acquainted. Of course, there is a lot more to this than simply popping in occasionally and sitting in on a class, but that is one element of becoming involved and being aware of the nitty-gritties of school life. The relationship between teachers and administrative staff, I believe, needs to be such that the teacher not merely tolerates, but he or she actually appreciates being evaluated. Everybody knows that everybody has capacity for improvement. A quote that I found in a book by John Maxwell, he said, experience isn't always the best teacher, but evaluated experience is. Experience isn't always the best teacher, evaluated experience is. I see we're very close to the end of our time here. In verse 27 yet, I'd like to bring out one point. And Moses let his father-in-law depart, and he went his way into his own land. There's a time to come and a time to leave. One experienced teacher that I spoke with, I asked for advice for this workshop, this topic, and that was the first thing that he thought of, that, you know, it's nice to see them coming, but eventually it's also nice to see them go. Everybody needs their space, and teachers are no different. When administrators have delegated responsibility with clear direction given, they need to at some point step back and allow the teacher to implement the plan, giving room for growth in ability, realizing that various levels of experience, upbringing, and differing personalities will bring different results in how the classroom is conducted in the real shoe leather world of teaching. Well, that was our final buzzer, so it is time to dismiss here. I'm sorry that I didn't give you more time to share your thoughts, but I trust that this workshop has inspired us to keep visiting our schools and has given us a greater desire to sense, or a sense of responsibility in being the support and encouragement to our teachers that we ought to be.